Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the fire. I'm Kylie, and today I'm going to be having a conversation with Andy Harris of the Old Paints. We talk a bit about his involvement with that band and some of their upcoming shows. And we also talk a bit about, I guess, some of their past shows, or specifically, they got to play at Sidewalk. So we talk a little bit about Sidewalk Film Festival. And then we also talk about his zine fest that was not too long ago, and the zine library that he's putting together. And we talk about a bunch of other stuff too. You'll get to hear that soon enough. We met at Railroad Park to have this conversation, and I've been out there a couple of times, but not a whole lot, and it's been a while since I've got to go there. So got out there like an hour before we had planned on meeting, so that I could go around a bit and take some pictures. And recently, my camera, I've had it since 2008, and it's served me well. And digital cameras, like the mechanical components in them, have a limited lifespan, and I guess I've just taken so many pictures that I wore out the shutter release on the camera. And that the parts of the camera that actually capture the image still work, and fortunately I have a little wireless shutter release, like, a remote clicker that I can press it and the camera will take a picture. So working with a tripod is going to become, not an option anymore, but, the only way really I can really compose an image well. I've taken my camera out and shot one hand on the camera and the other with the remote, but it does affect my ability to shoot, because I don't have two hands. And given time, I would probably be able to adjust a bit, but, don't plan on having this handicap forever. And anyways, I didn't have my tripod when I was at Railroad, so just went around and started taking a couple setup shots, getting my settings straight on the camera. And there's a project to install all these mini Vulcans around the city, and they're all like painted up. And I believe the first one was set at Railroad Park, or if not the first, then one of them, because there is one there. And I was getting some pictures of it, and then see somebody walking up with a guitar, and I figure, well, this must be Andy. And so I start walking that way, and then when I get up to him, I was like, hey, I'm Kylie. And then I asked if he was Andy, or as I think I might have said, like, you must be Andy. And I guess he didn't hear what I said, and so he was just like, yeah, or whatever, or maybe I didn't hear what he said. And so anyways, I start walking with him a little ways, and then I start feeling like, I don't think this is who I think it is. So I ask him again, hey, are you Andy? And he's like, no, man, I'm... And then, unfortunately, I can't recall his name, but it wasn't Andy. And so, at that point, I was like, well, can I take some pictures of you? And he let me, and he played his guitar a bit, and I walked around and took a couple pictures. And then, I guess, hearing the guitar, the park attendant came out, and it sat down, and then I walked over to him and asked again if I could take his picture, and I did. And he said, yeah, I could, and so I did. And then after that, I walked around to where there's some construction going on, and again asked a couple folks if I could, like, take their pictures, and, a couple of them said no. And then one guy, like, before I, could ask anything, just started posing, like, these, sort of, like, ridiculous poses. But so, I crossed the street and take a couple pictures, and then we talk for a minute afterwards, and he's asking, like, what I was doing. I just explained sort of what I just said to y'all, like, and So then I make my way back to where the guitar player and the park attendant were, and now there's now another person who's joined them, and he's like dressed all in white, and I guess like it was you know, it's like before Labor Day, and you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day apparently, and so that may have been why he was all white. I didn't figure that out until after the fact, though. Anyways, he looked, you know, particularly well put together, and like would make an interesting photograph. So I went over there and asked if I could take his picture. Oh yeah, and I forgot to mention he had a camera too. So like after he saw how I was having to take pictures, he had a couple questions for me, and it turns out I have had the good fortune of meeting someone by the name of Charles Essington Walton IV, and he gave me a quick lesson in composing, you know, a good portrait. And yeah, like that was pretty exciting. I wasn't expecting to you know, make a connection like that while, you know, just like all because I decided to get somewhere early and you know, get to, I guess, take in a bit of the place first, and yeah, like just take some pictures. So yeah, getting somewhere early is you know, I guess, pretty good thing to do. Encourage you give it a try sometime if you can. Anyways, so about the time Charles was finished, you know, giving me like, you know, a little lesson in photography, he or the person that he was going to meet, the person that he was there to meet arrived, and Andy was arriving as well, so we parted ways, and yeah, like sat down and talked to Andy. So yeah, already told you a bit about what the conversation's gonna be like, and I hope you enjoy. He plays a couple songs at the end, and I'm gonna throw in one of their tracks here at the beginning as well. So hope you enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side. sitting down today with Andy Harris of The Old Paints.
Hey.
All right, sitting here at Railroad Park, and it is another hot and humid day. Summer's not over yet.
No, that'll be on like the 22nd, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
Then it won't be warm anymore.
Here's hoping.
That's how that works.
Not sure it's always the case, though.
No, that's always the case. History has shown that on the first day of fall, we put on flannel and it starts to be like 70 degrees all the time. So just like the groundhog says, there's like two more weeks of... No, wait. Does fall start in September or August?
No, I'm pretty sure it says September. That was what I heard earlier today.
So like September 20th. So that's like 2.5 weeks away.
Right.
And that'll be cool.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been a very humid summer. I'm glad I haven't been haven't been out in it too much.
Mm-hmm.
I was like walking around earlier and like seeing all that construction over there, is trying to get a couple pictures of some people doing work, and it's funny, like, you know, some people, you know, the very camera shy, it's like the moment I hold up my camera, they like put up their hand and start walking away, and other people start posing for me, so that's always fun.
Construction workers, they don't want to be photographed on the job?
Yeah, or like I said, some of them don't want to, and then some of them jump in front of the camera. Like, I used to work a job doing construction documentation. I was, like, going out on the job sites like that and having to cover...
I can tell you why some of those people don't want to be photographed.
I can imagine a couple reasons.
Yeah. I can imagine the main reason.
The story I was always told, somebody who didn't want to get their picture taken, I was like, I'm on the most wanted list.
Yeah. So they just don't have their... They're not documented.
And that's another one. But, when I was working, I was just, you know, supposed to be getting pictures of you know, the buildings, not the people, so, but that time I was wanting to get people working, because, that's, I guess, like, you know, raw, honest picture, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right on.
Right. So, yeah, you're... Like in the band, the Old Paints.
That's true.
How long have y'all been doing that thing?
Oh, no, two and a half years.
And were you involved in any other projects before that or alongside that?
Yeah, I mean, I've done other things before, other bands, but, you know, they're all dead now.
Have they all, I guess, like had like a similar sound, or is this the first time like you've sort of like culminated all those I guess different styles?
Well, you know, in a blind listening test, if I threw on an old recording, I could tell it was me playing guitar, and if I was singing, I could tell it was me singing. So those sounds overlap, like it's me. It's my distinctive, the way I play, I'm like, oh, that's me. So that probably overlaps, but then there's all new different people I'm playing with, so that makes a different combination of sounds.
Right.
So a little bit yes, a little bit no.
And who else is in the band?
The main compadre is Breely Flower. She's a drummer and a singer. And then we've got Van Hollingsworth, who has recently joined. Well, Breely's been in the group for about the whole time. And then Van, he joined like at the start of this year, and he plays lead guitar. And there's another guy named Zachary Cooner, who you might also know from Glories, who plays guitar. And then I'll play guitar, bass, depending on what's going on, how full of a lineup we have that night.
Right. And it's like, do you write all the material, or is it like a collaborative process? Or
everybody writes, yeah.
Awesome.
All the stuff that we've recorded so far was just written by me and Breely, because that's all there was for a while. And then all the stuff we've started working on for the future, though, whoever's in the group is in the writing process.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because, yeah, I've been listening to some of y'all's stuff, and it's like, it's a really solid, like, tight sound that y'all have. Like, it's very,
don't know, yeah, just like I enjoy it. And like one of the things that like it was one of the songs I was listening to, the like Told You Eyes, like right. That instrumental bit in it is like just like a glass slide, or is it a like a lap guitar, or
there's one guitar in there that is a slide. It's just an electric guitar but with a slide. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, like I don't know, that sound is a very I guess, you know, like haunting sort of, like, I don't know, like back in high school I was really into like Godspeed You Black Emperor, and there's like a lot of that sound, so like whenever I hear that, it sort of like, you know, instantly draws me in again.
Cool.
So yeah, like I guess, like, what is some of your, like, do you have any sort of like regular like process for how like you come up with these songs, or like what's sort of the inspiration behind it?
The inspiration is that it's fun and then music's cool and most everybody likes music, so I don't think even that like that needs to be explained too much. Like, music is just cool. But the process is pretty consistent as long as you're doing it all the time. And it's like, well, are you writing a lot? Then okay, then the more you write, then the better you'll be at it. And my thing is just like, if I have an idea, I'll just push record and just work it out. For those of you who are listening, I'm doing air guitar motions. And you just kind of mime it out and play it and bash the record or a melody or a lick or whatever. And my process is always like, I'll record it and I'll have like a 12-minute demo that's like 30% good. And then I'll play it back and I'll take a quick note, and then I'll play the notes that I took, and then it'll be like 8 minutes, right? And then I'll do it like one more time because I just want to spend like an hour on it and then do something else. And then the next time it'll be like 6 minutes, you know? So after like a week of that, and maybe just 30 minutes or an hour a day, you know, then you've pretty much got a song finished if you do that process. I think that process works. Though you got to practice being, you know, not stepping all over yourself and not overthinking it while you're recording something live that you've never played before.
Mm.
So
yeah.
You got to get out of the way of your mind and just listen. It's about the ears. If it sounds good, it's good. If it doesn't sound good, it's not. And so that's why I quickly erase it from 12 minutes to 8 minutes, because I don't think that, oh, I wrote it, so it's great. I'm like, I wrote it. Is it good or not? And if it doesn't pass the ear test, then I trash it immediately.
Cool. Like, you know, because I'm a visual artist, so, like, I've had a lot of friends who you know, are musical artists, and I always think it's interesting, like the compare and contrast on like methods and process, because like when I sit down to work, like I'll either like look at some new photos that I've taken, or you know, I've got like some idea in my head, and I just like, and I sit down and I just like work on a bunch of stuff, and yeah, it's just sort of like an aimless, or just like, you know, I do what I think, like, you know, I enjoy doing at the time, or I think looks cool, and then it's like not really thinking of an end result. I'm just sort of like, you know, putting it all out there, and
yes,
then
sure.
Later I'll go back and look at those things and like, oh well, that still, you know, works, or like, oh well, that, like, I can see what I was trying to do there, but it doesn't hold up, and so I'll try to take that idea and maybe like use it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. I definitely have a backlog of ideas that are like incomplete. And sometimes I've patched them together. Like, I'll have something that's 37 seconds from a year ago, and it happens to fit with another 2 minutes and 12 seconds. So it's like, alright, well, that's fine.
Cool. And then, yeah, like what you were saying about, you know, just like working a little bit every day, that's also, again, like, you know, people like musical artists or visual artists, or even like a couple friends that I have who write, like it's always like the thing is, you got to just like try to find time, you know, once a day to just, you know, take 30 minutes to an hour and just like work on it a little bit, and just pushing the rock a little bit further.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't give it at least that much time, you're a bozo. Some people probably, I used to do like 2, 3, 4 hours a day. 4 hours is a good shift. Like, you work all morning on something, and then that's it. And there will be occasional times where I'll spend 4 hours. And that's, like, maybe actual recording. You know. But I hate to practice too much. Because we play enough shows where it's like, well, once the song's done, then I've learned it. But then we just have to get good at playing it together. So instead of me practicing at home all the time or in a practice room, it's just like, well, let's just play it.
And then I guess that can segue into, like, you're wearing a Sidewalk Film t-shirt.
That's true.
And y'all played recently at Sidewalk. How did that go?
It was a lot of fun. We cranked it. The lineup that night was me and Zach Cooner and Breeley. A couple of loud guitars and a drum kit, and we were singing and playing our booties off, and everybody was down there having a good time at our little stage tent thing. It was fun.
Like, I've only been able to make it to Sidewalk for, like, a few select films here and there throughout the years. Like, in the past, like, some of the jobs that I've had is just, like, I've been working those at the week that Sidewalk happened, so I've not able been to just, like, go the whole week or the whole, you know, festival and just catch film after film. But hopefully here, you know, maybe next year, year after, I'll be able to, like, actually, like, dig in and do it.
Yeah, sure.
Did you catch any of the films that were playing, or?
Yeah, I saw quite a few. I saw a lot on Sunday. Saturday I was busy working a volunteer shift, and then we played. But I saw one Friday night. They just had one Friday night, which was it's called Raiders, which is about these guys who remade Raiders of the Lost Ark shot for shot from the summers when they were like age 10 to 17. They spend all summer reshooting Raiders, and so it was a documentary about their remake of a movie that already existed. So it was kind of 3-in-1. Really nice. Sunday, there were two that I really liked. One was a doc called Western, which was maybe what a modern Western is, and featured a lot of small-town characters like country people, rancheros, or what's the word I'm looking for. Anyway. Like people who raised cattle and would then ship the cattle to the states, or small town mayors, but who are busy getting messed up by drug wars. And so mayors and policemen were getting killed, and there was an embargo, so the poor farmer couldn't ship his cattle to the U.S. And so all these little people who weren't really doing anything were getting messed up by the drug wars, Juarez City, etc.
See, my photography professor was talking about a film. I think she was able to, like, give, like, the opening, like, introduction for it or whatever. It was talking about, like, over in the Middle East, like, for I think it was, she was saying, like, in Afghanistan, like, for several years it was, like, illegal for people to have cameras and take photos, and so it was following a group of people who during that time period continued to do journalistic work. And just like how I guess difficult it was, and how secretive they had to be about what they're doing, up until the point where they release it and put it out. Sounds like something I'd like to see. It sounded pretty wild, because I was like, that's what I do. I take pictures, and I like taking pictures of people. So can't even imagine what that would be like if they just one day said, like, nope, can't do that anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to imagine it, so I won't. And then I saw a good one on Sunday night. The last film was a comedy called The Overnight, which was a real riot, featuring 10-inch prosthetic wieners and, anything that'll make you laugh. Sexy jokes. Yeah.
Cool.
Kids walking in on swinger orgies. Children that are supposed to be sleeping walking in on swinger orgies. Whoops.
Many, many times worse than just walking in on your parents.
Yeah, which I've also never done, and I'm not gonna imagine, so I won't.
Let's see, one of the films I did get to see, this was a couple years ago, it was called like VHS. It was like a horror movie. It was like a compilation. I think it was like four or five different directors each, like doing their own like short film, and then like it fit within the context of like these people like break into a house and find all these VHSs, and they start watching them, and like whenever they put in a VHS, it cuts to, you know, the short film, and then it jumps back out at the end, and it shows them in the house again, and you know, like it turns out like the house that they broke into wasn't empty, and all these weird things start happening, but that was pretty interesting. I enjoyed seeing that one.
That's cool. Was that anything like UHF?
No, nothing like UHF.
VHS, not UHF. Okay.
But that's a good one, too.
Do you have a favorite line from UHF?
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I guess, like, the you know, classic mop speech. The janitor talking about, like, can't take away his mop.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah.
God.
I think I'm just going to go with supplies. That's a good line.
Yeah.
When the guy jumps out of the closet. Supplies. What is the name of the janitor? Is it Leonard? Milton? It's an inspiring speech, though.
Yeah, it's worth looking it up on YouTube.
Uncle Woody? What does he call himself?
I have no recollection.
Oh, nuts. I'm going to have to go back and watch UHF again. Refresh.
As like my significant other, she is like a fan of, or I guess like not a big fan of Weird Al, but like, you know, enjoys several of his songs. But she's never seen that movie, so I need to get her to sit down and watch it sometime.
Oh, he's Stanley, right? He's Stanley Splodowski.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what his name is. Stanley. He's like Uncle Nutso. Nutsy.
No, that's
Nutsy's
like the show that he did. Yeah.
Nutsy's Playhouse or something.
The fire hose.
Stanley Splodowski.
So what were they trying to find? It was like in a big pit of like oatmeal or something.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't remember what that was.
That's such a bizarre movie.
Yeah.
Has he done any other films?
Weird Al?
Yeah.
No.
It's just that one and done.
That's it. It's a good one, though.
Oh, yeah. So, let's see. What are some, I guess, some other shows you've played recently? Or any shows you got coming up? I saw there's, like, something coming up in the 20th of something.
Yeah, you know, I can never remember the shows we've already done, but I can only remember what's coming. Because I don't know why. I think I just have a void where everything sinks. Once it's done, then I forget about it. What's coming up? I'm playing by myself in Tuscaloosa next Thursday. Then we're playing like on the 15th at a place called the Coal Yard in Helena. We're playing on like the 25th. We're playing in, 25th on Friday. So the 18th is probably the Coal Yard. 25th, we're playing at Eclipse in Montebello.
Right.
On the 26th, we're going to Bruton, which is like close to Mobile, to play the Creek Bend Music Festival.
Mm.
That's all I can think of for September. There's some stuff coming up. We're playing a Halloween show at a place called The Sanctuary in Montgomery. It's going to be a real freak fest. We're playing November 27th at the Black Market with Golden Monica, which is going to be our Thanksgiving show, Thanksgiving weekend. So there's a few things.
Cool.
Yeah.
Like I said, that was the show on the 25th at Eclipse. That's the one I just remember seeing on Facebook recently.
Oh, yeah, with Nuclear Milwaukee.
Yeah, I saw them a couple months ago. That was a really fun act.
They're cool guys. We played with them in Montgomery once already. And we'll probably do a few more in the future.
Yeah, I saw them. It was a house show down in Montevallo at Jackie's place. It was when she was getting ready to move. It was like doing like a going away or moving out party.
Yeah.
And And then actually, like, there's another guy I was talking to recently. He performed there as well, Joel, who is talking about, like, he's wanting to try to get a group of people together to do like a little, like, you know, like maybe like an extended weekend tour of just like going around to all these venues and like, you know, recording live shows and just trying to, like, I guess, like, get the word out that you know, there's like all these, you know, small pockets throughout Alabama of you know, where, like, you know, things are happening, but like, you know, people, I guess, don't necessarily know about it, or at least not until after the fact.
Yeah.
It's been fun playing around the state a lot, because it's like, oh, you can play a lot of places. You just have to find them and talk to people and keep going.
Right. Yeah. And so you said there's a show coming up in, was it Helena, you said? Or yeah, see, I've never heard of anything going on in Helena.
Sure. And why would you have? You know what I mean?
Right.
But there's like a sort of a main street in Helena.
Old Town Helena.
Yeah, right. Where you can play. There's a few places to play. And kind of considering the kind of band we are, I was surprised that a lot of people were receptive. Helena maybe is a little more weirder than we might give it credit for.
Yeah. And I would hope that that's like the case with a lot of these places. There's, like, you know, like an undercurrent of people who aren't, you know, widely talked about outside of their circles, and so
It's,
you know, just a matter of getting all those circles to link together.
Yeah.
Getting a little overlap.
Yeah.
Like, I've got there's a teacher I had back in high school, like, taught, like, you know, graphic design and like, you know, basic computer stuff. He's got a business in Helena called the Bead Biz. And they have like beads and jewelry, and they do like little classes on, like, you know, making that sort of stuff. And he does like some really cool, you know, like metal work, making like pendants and that kind of stuff. Little odd, you know, bits of culture here and there that, again, yeah, it's just like you don't necessarily know about it unless you go looking for it.
Yeah. I guess there's enough people around. What they're saying must be true, that people are wanting to get more into the cultural renaissance that's happening in the state, and you know, there's going to be at least one group of people in every town, seems like, that are going to want to make their stuff and see what other people are making.
Oh yeah. And especially, I don't know, that age group of you know, high school or just coming out of high school, where, you know, they can't afford to get out of the town yet, and so, like, they're trying to make it work where they're at.
Sure.
I'm of the mindset as, like, you know, I wish more people would try to stick around and make things work here rather than going someplace where it's already going on.
I don't know about that. I can see both sides of that argument.
Right.
But, you know, I'm careful not to just bang the Birmingham drum. Because some people just want to talk about Birmingham this and Birmingham that. And it's like, well, that's fine. And we're a Birmingham band, or we support Birmingham artists. But it's like, all right, fine. Well, there's other good music, too.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, if you just played in Birmingham forever, you'd get tired of it, and everyone would get tired of you. So, on the flip side, you still gotta go other places, even if it's just Helena and Montevallo, and then Tuscaloosa, Montgomery, Huntsville, Florence, Nashville, Atlanta, like, play all those places, too.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not saying, like, you know, not tour or you know, just, like, stay exclusively in the South. Like, I think it's good to go out and cross-pollinate, but, like, I also think it's important to, you know, like, to come back and share what you find out in the world, because, like, you know, it's like, again, like, I feel like there's, or at least for me personally, there's a lot of people that I've known who have left here because they said, like, well, there's nothing going on, but, like, there is stuff. It's just they didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think if more people were to, like, try to, you know, build those connections, then like Birmingham would be just as good as other places. And I think, you know, we're working towards that. Like you said, like there's, it seems like there's a bit of a cultural renaissance coming about.
Those aren't going to be my words. Those are somebody else's words. But I'm cautiously optimistic at best.
Like yesterday, I was at the art crawl up here, and it's like I was getting set up, and I don't know, like I seem to sometimes like I guess attract somewhat eccentric folks. It could have something to do with my art, but so yeah, I was setting up, and then a guy comes rolling up on his bike, and he sees my work, and he stops, and we start talking about, you know, what I'm doing, and then somehow we very quickly segue into dictatorships in South America and Central America, and how like there's like I guess I think it was like Guatemala or something like that, like somewhere that they recently just put their president on trial for like war crimes and atrocities that happened like 2 or 3 decades ago, and how like, you know, he's, you know, like wish that would happen here in the U.S., but like, you know, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen, and that like, you know, whenever we get a new president, it's like, oh, we're not looking back anymore, we're just looking forward, and we're going to forget about what that last guy did, and you know, then we're going to do it all over again. And then like as we're talking and having this conversation, this other guy comes walking up, and then he like hands us some pamphlets about like he's like an outsider folk artist, and he's converted his backyard into a mini art park, and it's a what did he say, like it's a an art city state, like sort of something, like he's seceded from the U.S. and is just like a state of art. And like talking about how like he goes out and finds like junk and trash and will haul it home and then like, you know, make stuff out of it, and yeah, like he's turned his whole backyard into like this art park, and it's open to the public every afternoon. And okay. He's trying to like, I guess, organize and get like, he's wanting Birmingham to be rebranded as the Magic City of Art. As he sounded like, you know, like got some, you know, interesting ideas, and he's, you know, he's pushing, he's doing, like he's got a vision, and he's working on it. So I think that's pretty cool.
Alright. Yeah, sure. I wouldn't know anything about that rebranding a city. yeah, sure, go for it, whatever.
But yeah, like I was like, you know, going back to that idea that it seems like, I don't know, especially I guess like Birmingham's sort of you know, it's no longer the industrial city that it once was, and we've got UAB now and like a strong medical college, but like, you know, we're going through this process of revitalization.
We've got the condo industry over here,
yeah,
behind us is booming.
That's coming up.
Yeah. Or the loft industry, whatever this is called.
Right. And then like there's you know, like construction going on over at Five Points. Like I've been doing Food Not Bombs since 2008. Oh, and yeah. Like within the past year, like the face of Five Points has just like started changing very quickly, like knocking buildings down and new, yeah, stuff's coming up.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's true.
And
this is a nice segue to what's going on with like zines and bookmaking in,
sure,
town. So to say nothing about Zine Fest, I want to start an Alabama zine library, right? So I've been making zines for long enough, going back to like selling comic books in the first grade. I'm gonna like go ahead and say those were zines too, you
right
know? And my first character was called Malox Man, which I think I just stole from something else. But you know, you have I don't know, the ideas of a 6-year-old.
Right.
Anyway, maybe it was Kaopectate. It was one of those, like, things you drink to stop farting or whatever. And it was blue. Blue liquid that helps you stop farting. So, anyway, zine library in Alabama. And we had a little zine fest a few weeks ago that just got a lot of the zine makers together. We had a reading Friday night at Continental Bakery downtown. Had all day just freeform zine making with supplies and everything included at Seasick Records, and a workshop at a paper studio, Paper Workers Local, and then a contest at night magazine an hour. And so we had a lot of participants, probably like total about 60, 70 people showed up the whole weekend, which is, I'd say, pretty good amount of people making zines.
Yeah.
And then when the zine fest started taking shape, someone from the Museum of Art approached me and said, well, we've been having similar ideas and blah, 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 let's collaborate. So I met with the girl who seems to head up the Museum of Art library yesterday. And they have a space on, like, 3rd Avenue, like, right by, or across from Revelator and by the Lyric and that block, like, 19th, 3rd and 19th about.
Right.
And that a law firm is donating, and they're going to have it from January through, like, May. And there's going to be lots of bookmaking supplies there. They're going to have workshops totally open to the public, at least on Monday. And hold the library there for at least like 6 months and have a lot of cool zine related events.
Awesome.
So that's like another thing, like buildings, empty buildings being used or buildings being torn down and new things. So that kind of empty whole front office is now going to be occupied for at least 6 months starting in January. Because they're getting the space ready right now.
Right.
But just by the zine makers and the bookmakers. Not strictly zines, but bookmaking, you know.
Self-publishing.
Right. With a nice focus on zines, for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like, I guess up until recently, I don't know, like, I've not really bumped into a whole lot of other, like, zine makers. There was a couple years ago, a friend and I, like, went to... it was called like the 24-hour zine thing. It was like a Hen House Distro was hosting the event, and yeah, it's like they had 24 hours. It's like Hen House Distro. I forget the name of the person behind that. I'm not sure. I don't think they're active anymore.
But where was that?
It was over here in Southside.
Okay.
And it was just like, you know, like we went to their apartment, and then they had like, you know, several people sitting in the apartment, you know, with like supplies and.
Right on.
And we ended up making a zine called Pro Tips on like basic computer usage for like, you know, somebody who like had no idea how to use a computer. It's like
plug in computer.
Right, and it's like, and this is like, you know, the CD drive. This is the floppy disk, and you know, like, and they all like, you know, basic, very
floppy
very
disk.
Basic. Yeah.
What year was this?
Not that long ago, but
1989.
And but yeah, it's cool because you know, like when I'm out at Food Not Bombs, like the kind of zines that I like having out there is like, I guess like, you know, like practical, either like DIY or like informative, like, you know, sort of information that can be directly applied rather than like theoretical stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought like that could be useful for somebody who maybe like has access to the public library and can get on a computer but doesn't really know where to go from there.
That actually would be helpful if they just had them sitting in front of all the computers at the library.
Right.
But you might also need a zine that says how to read. which that just has pictures, or I don't know, how do you teach someone how to read with a book?
That is,
you probably don't,
a conundrum.
Yeah,
catch 22.
Yeah. Well, let me back up. You have the zine that you mentioned, how to use the computer. Then you also have just a picture version of how to use the computer.
Yeah,
so they can read pictures.
Hands, yeah, touching the computer.
Point finger here, press. Yeah. Yeah.
Do screen caps of the mouse in different places on the screen.
Uh-huh. But then it's like, well, if you can't read, how do you type all this shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe using computers is not for the illiterate.
Yeah,
unless you're just
probably
like,
so.
Looking up dirty stuff.
Or, you know, you get, you know.
Because you can type in XXX.
Or now we've got the smartphones, or you can just say, I want to search this or whatever, and then it goes.
And that's true. I don't have a smartphone though, so you can just talk to Google.
Yeah,
oh,
or
God.
You know, Siri for
Siri.
For the iPhone.
I've heard of that. Huh. Yeah.
Although whenever I see somebody using it, it seems like it still doesn't work quite right yet. Like that, it misunderstands what you're saying, or you know, something goes awry.
Yeah, I did an interview with a musician that I won't name, just because. But they sent back their questions. Their answers with Siri, And just decoding it was a real riot act. It was fun. Funny. It's like a different kind of language. It's like, well, this might have been spoken by, like, an immigrant. He's almost got it.
Yeah. I've not quite figured it out yet.
Yeah.
It'll be certainly, a stranger world once the computers are culturally literate.
I'll be the last one without a smartphone.
I resisted for many years, but then got this one, and it's useful being able to, like, you know, get on the internet and search stuff here and there.
Uh-huh.
But I find more often than not, like, when I try to use the GPS on it, like, it's inaccurate. Like, it either sends me some asinine route or takes me to the wrong place. And, you know, that could be a problem. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. But, I prefer the you know, getting verbal directions from somebody, tell me where to go, because I can trust a person.
Yeah. You know what I do? I have a computer and an internet, obviously. I'm not that caveman-like. And whenever I'm going somewhere I don't know, I just, like, look it up on the Google Maps. I write everything down, and then I still have, like, a little sheet of paper I can read when I'm in the car.
Right.
And so that keeps me detached enough from the screen where I feel like I'm okay.
Like, there's a... Like I said, like this job I used to work, we would, like, travel around, you know, mostly Alabama. Sometimes we'd go to neighboring states and do, like, photography and videography for stuff. And, we would always...
Look at that thing going up.
Oh, yeah, the buck hoist.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Oh, yeah, I've ridden a couple of them.
Everybody who's still listening, what is that?
It's a buck hoist. It's essentially a, person-operated elevator. You walk inside, and there's somebody whose job it is all day to just go up and down in the buck hoist.
What is he doing?
He opens the door for you, he closes the door for you, he makes sure that nobody's gonna fall out, and then he presses the up button or the down button.
What?
Yep.
So he's not doing any work, he's just getting people up and down.
Right.
Ay-yay-yay. Outdoor elevator. Looks deadly.
Yeah, I suppose, they're at the beginning and end of every shift, they're supposed to check everything to make sure it's not going to fall apart on you.
Ay, ay, ay. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
I'd barf every day.
Yeah, like the folks that I met who had that job tend to be kind of, they weren't the happiest folks I bumped into.
I can't imagine so.
Especially, like, back, like, you know, it's like when it's really hot or really cold, and I was like, that's it's exposed to the elements, so you just gotta stand there and bear it.
Phew. It went down the floor. That must be nice. Like, look how tall that building is. It's a long way down.
That's the, I know the name of that building. It's Lear Tower.
Yeah.
With Birmingham's Zeppelin Port.
Zeppelin Port.
Yeah, it's like it looks like a truncated radio tower. It's originally was supposed to be for Zeppelins, that they could drop an anchor and stop there.
Good God.
That's what I've heard, at least.
Now, where's the hipster business that hasn't already, like, started just getting, like, dirigible tours around town?
Right.
Right. Good Lord.
Now, if only the Hindenburg didn't happen, you know. Maybe instead of taking airplanes everywhere, we'd be taking...
Blimping it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be different.
Yeah, blimp fuel is not hot enough to melt steel beams. That's the theory I've heard.
Oh, man, some weird alternate universe where
that happened. Yeah, yeah. Oh, the humanity of it all. Two blimps today, September 11th.
Very, very slow tragedy.
Yeah. Took out 7 windows.
Luckily, everybody had time to evacuate.
King Kong came to the rescue and batted down the jihad blimp. That could have happened, folks.
If only.
Yeah. I would prefer that universe. Damn it, Hindenburg, you fucked it up for everybody. And the Titanic, too. If the Titanic and the Hindenburg hadn't wrecked on their inaugural attempts. Oh, boy.
Totally different world.
Oh, man. Oh, well.
There's, like, a joke me and some friends. It's like, it'd be, like a fake advertisement for you know, a company. It was, like the candy bar Zero, mm-hmm. and like it'd just like be a picture of somebody eating a Zero bar in front of a tragedy. Like, don't be a hero, eat a Zero. No, and, like, standing in front of the Hindenburg and or on yeah. the Titanic.
Oh boy. Yeah, I like that. Don't be a hero, eat a Zero. Zero's a good candy bar now.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had one.
Oh yeah, I was attracted to it in my candy bar eating days because of the nice silver color.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the others are brown, and it stuck out. Here's a brown wrapper with a word on it, but Zero was silver and blue.
I ate a couple of whatchamacallits.
Brown.
Because the name.
Well, now, yeah, okay, I'll give you that. It's got a good name, and it has a nice yellow and red font. Mr. Goodbar, they got away from the brown wrapper.
Yep, going yellow.
Going yellow. Hard to miss. Reese's, obviously the best, right? And not brown.
No wrong way.
I've tried, folks. I've eaten Reese's 7 billion different ways, you know.
Never the same way twice. Yeah,
never. Because the thing is, here's how you eat a Reese's a different way every time. If you just put it on a McDonald's hamburger or a Waffle House burger, then you're guaranteed. Because both of those places advertise that each one of their hamburgers are different.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, McDonald's is like 50 billion hamburgers sold. They're all different. You put a Reese's on it, that's a different way to eat a Reese's.
Oh, yeah.
Waffle House, the numbers are dramatically less than 50 billion. Still, their hamburgers are supposedly different every time. So you put a Reese's on it or under it or inside of it, you've got a new way to eat a Reese's.
There was one time, there was a period of time where me and several friends, like, we would always, like, meet at a specific Waffle House, and that just became, like, our, you know, weekend, you know, Saturday night, we'd go there and hang out at the Waffle House.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we outstayed our welcome and made the wait staff hate us, but, like...
I get good benefits.
There's one guy or one of my friends who, he brought in a can of DAC. Which is, like, you know, an off-brand version of Spam.
Mm-hmm.
It's just canned meat. And so we're sitting there, and then, you know, the line cook or whatever, he comes up and asks, like, you know, what's our order? Because I guess, like, you know, the waitress was busy somewhere else. And he pulls out this can of DAC and is like, can you cook this for me? And they were kind of, you know, I guess slow. And so, like, the guy just, like, looked at him for a second. Was like, okay. And, like, he threw it on the grill, fried it up for him, and gave it to him.
Okay.
Well,
DAK. How's that spelled?
D-A-K.
Just a K.
And the tin is shaped sort of like, I guess, like a guitar pick. It's a rounded off triangle.
Okay. Yuck. Yeah, I mean, they couldn't even afford four letters. They
no.
couldn't afford the C in DAK. Oh, boy. That's serious.
The food we eat.
Mm.
Yeah,
man. I'll say. Going back to zines that have
sure.
Manuals or advice and tips on how to live life, I have a zine called The Secrets of Dating.
Hmm.
And it is a serious piece. On
is this pre or post internet dating?
It is post. And it is influenced by, you know, lackadaisical dating. Lackadaisical contact, human connection.
Mm.
And there's an allegory. It starts off with a short story, which is an allegory called Gone Fishing, which features a country boy who goes fishing and he learns how to properly fish. You know, you gotta use protection when you're fishing in toxic waters, which is kind of what the world is. So the country boy learns how to fish, and boy does he catch a beauty. The one that got away finally landed in his arms. So you can learn a lot from that story. Then there's 9 basic rules of dating, that make obvious sense when you stop and think about it, such as get tired of being right all the time, learn to play the banjo for real, not like some people do, because yuck. Things like that. Those are good tips to dating.
Oh, yeah.
And then other resources, which are links that I made up. Yeah, Secrets of Dating Manual. Practical stuff. Yeah. Here's my favorite rule of dating, actually. If any guy / girl seems remotely interested, ask them out. Some of them will say yes.
That's a pretty good one.
You know what? Ask them out. They say no. All right. Some of them are going to say no. Maybe most. Some of them will say yes.
Yeah, you gotta put yourself out there.
Sure. How are you going to catch fish without a hook?
Yeah, taking pictures earlier. You know, just asking, hey, can I take a picture? I'm like, nope. All right.
No.
Okay. And going to the next person. Okay. And, you know, snap a shot.
Some guy asked to take my picture at Sidewalk Fest, and I'm like, eh, what's in it for me? So the trick to this story is, though, this guy was working the hot dog truck. And I said, well, what's in it for me? And he said, brats. And I said, all right, you can take my picture. I got a bucket, a little paper bucket, 2 brats for one picture. Well, I didn't know I was worth 2 brats. Maybe I could become a model, like a hot dog model. All right, take my picture, 2 brats.
That sounds like a good deal.
Playboy shoot. Like, there are 6 different pages where pictures of me on there. We're talking 12 brats. You know what I mean? And that's not... We're not just talking about published photos. They probably took 50 or 100 that day. Like a 200 brats. I could freeze those.
Just rolling in brats.
Rolling in brats. Like, get a little chipotle mustard on there. I'm rolling around in mustard. That's what the shoot is. Me rolling around naked in mustard with a... wearing a prosthetic brat.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I
play dog.
Would not be surprised if that photo shoot's happened already.
Yeah, I've got the internet. I'll look that up. Like Chipotle mustard male nude.
I did another one of these. I was talking to somebody who, so Ryan Nordness, he, it's like, did like a study on abnormal sexual behavior, and he was talking about like different, like, I guess, like kinks that people have, and sort of like, I guess, like the age group where people like start exploring that, and he brought up the, like, you know, just like in passing, like, it's like trying to make asinine remarks, and if like, well, I'm gonna try, like, you know, mustard and see if, you know, mustard turns me on. It's like, I'm gonna eat a bunny. Like, no, I'm not into mustard.
No, so, not a turn on. You know, I'm more of like a mint chocolate chip ice cream girl. That turns me on. Just like, eat it. And then I'm like, so turned on. But only in the summer. Then in the fall, like, brats turn me on. And in the winter, it's a big hearty bowl of chili. Yeah. In the spring, after I've hibernated, I'm really hungry. So I'm back on brats. But I'm also dehydrated because I've been just laying there. So I have, like, brats with green tea and honey.
That's a combination.
Yeah, I'll say. So that gets me going. And then by the summertime, it's just all ice cream again. And that's the cycle of a year.
Going back to the, you know, beginning of this, you know, where I guess that means we're almost in brat season.
We're almost in brat season, everybody. Johnsonville, are you listening? I know a podcast that needs a sponsor. Johnsonville, are you listening? It's brat season here in Alabama.
Get them while they're hot.
Yeah, hot brats. Or not.
Some like them cold.
Yeah, sure. I get it. You know, you got just a few minutes. You're already running late for work. You only got 2 pieces of your 3-piece suit on. You gotta eat a cold brat. You don't have time to heat it up with your green tea. It took long enough to warm up the green tea. You gotta have a cold brat. Chomp it down.
Yeah.
Brats on the go. How disgusting. No, just kidding, Johnsonville. Sounds great.
Yeah, hit me up.
Mm-hmm. And also, Bigelow tea. Like green tea with honey and lemon. So anybody who runs a honey company, also, we need a sponsor for this podcast. Or a lemon farm. Any of those four. Let's bring it.
Not that picky. I'll take any of them.
Yeah. Confucius say, when searching for sponsor, take what one can get. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to get on the Huggies record label.
Did not know that existed.
Just whatever. Just get that first album out there. Yeah.
There's a podcast that I listen to, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, and he has sponsors, and like, yeah, he always does these like asinine, really ridiculous adverts.
You have to. Yeah, a lot of the good ones tend to do that. Comedy Bang Bang has stupid ads.
Yeah.
What's the other one I like a lot? The Best Show has funny ads. Not as funny. Oh, have you ever listened to Hollywood Handbook?
No.
Oh, boy. These guys are outrageous. Outrageous characters. They're funny guys. One of the funniest podcasts is Hollywood Handbook. If you like podcasts for the ads, woohoo, this one is for you.
Where I put my pen?
I don't know.
Oh, let's see. We're sitting at 50 minutes now. Did you want to play us a couple tunes?
I can play some songs.
Awesome.
Let me get this guitar ready, everybody.
Get the camera.
Huggies, if you're listening, this is some of the stuff I got. I'm gonna have to tune it too. I'm in tune. Can I go?
Yeah, you're good.
All right.
Just a little bit further back.
How many you want me to play?
I guess, you know, somewhere like, you know, like 8 minutes worth or something, that'd be good.
I'll do two songs. Sitting in my car, it's hot. Alright, so here's a song that is called Emma Watson, Queen of Fashion. Queen of screen, Thank you. That was Emma Watson. Queen of Fashion. Now I'm going to play. The exposure will be great for me. Another night, another gig, in the same old broke-ass town. It's looking like a small crowd tonight, but another come around. It's gonna be a good night out here. Hey, that's a cute girl, man. I bet she came to see what my next move is gonna be. The exposure will be great for me. You, my fans, are number one. And you, pretty ladies, you're just like the sun. Another night, another gig, in the same old broke-ass town. It's the same old crowd there too. Ain't nothing I can do. Said good job and nodded silently as they walked out. Oh, you want me to come back next week? Yeah, I can play for free, cause the exposure will be great for me. Thank you, on my bended knee, cause the exposure will be great for me. Yeah, you're right, I agree that the exposure will be great for me. Hell yeah, I'll just play for free, cause the exposure will be great for me.
Awesome.
Cool, thanks. That was fun.
And yeah, like that's that song in particular, I feel like, you know, resonates a bit because especially like, I guess, you know, for musicians that seems to be the case, but also with you know, visual artists as well, there's a lot of or I guess just in the creative works in general, like people tend to ask artists to like, yeah, it's like to work for free but for the exposure, and yeah,
it's a big no-no, I think. Very rarely will I play for free. It, not to say that it doesn't happen, but, you know, most of the time if I'm playing somewhere and they're like, oh, well, you can sell your merch and tips and the exposure, which is, some people don't even say merch and tips, they're just like, oh, well, we can promise you exposure. The thing is, if I'm playing at your restaurant or whatever, or your brewery or whatever, and somehow if having the presence of music there is designed to what? Draw customers in and keep them there longer than they normally would, which means more sales.
Mm-hmm.
So if a portion of that sales doesn't go to the people who are creating those sales, then you can eat dirt. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so don't do it for free, people. Don't do it, because you're watering down the job market for the rest of us.
Yep.
Who are doing it for a living.
Gotta have
and you
skin.
Can do it for a living too. There's room enough to do it. You just do it consistently, you do it often, and you can middle class it. Particularly in a place like Birmingham, which is one of the redeeming qualities of Birmingham, you can middle class it as an artist here if you work hard at it. You know, there's so many other jobs in music besides Taylor Swift's job. Like, she has that job, and fine, more power to her. For the rest of us who can't do that, you know, bust your ass in middle class it.
Right.
Yeah.
As I've seen, like, I guess, like, you know, image on Facebook going around, it's like, you know, you wouldn't ask like a, you know, a plumber to come in and work for free, and it's like, oh, you know, like I'll tell people how great my drains work, and, you know, like that. No, it doesn't work like that.
That would be a thing.
And yeah. There's a Facebook group I joined recently called like the Birmingham Artists Union, and like, so far, just it, you know, it seems like it's like you know, the organizers just trying to get folks to meet in a communal place and make art together and, you know, get to know one another and sort of network that away. And he's posted a couple things about, like, you know, recently WBHM, the local NPR station, like, every year they, as a part of their fundraiser drive, they do these commemorative, you know, like, pint glasses with a local artist's design on it. And in the past, they've hired an artist to do the design, but this year they're doing an unpaid contest where they get, you know, there's no telling how many artists to submit work to them so that they get to choose which one they want. And so, like, there's no telling, like, how many work hours have been put into that project, you know, of unpaid labor from artists who are seeking exposure.
Does the winner not get paid?
I've not looked into it myself. There may be some sort of stipend or a prize or whatever, but yeah. But all the other people who put their time and effort into it, you know, yeah. Walk away with I guess, you know, just a pat on the back.
Well, you know, that's the chance you take with a contest. But I saw that, and I honestly did not have... I started a drawing and made, like, a sketch of it, but didn't have time to actually make the detailed one. I was very, very busy that week. And I wonder, though, did the winner not at least get paid?
Yeah, I would imagine like the winner would get something.
I would hope so.
But, yeah, like, I really enjoy that song, because I guess, you know, it speaks to me on some level. Like, what about that Emma Watson song? Like, that seems a bit more, funny, how'd that come about?
Well, one more note on that. Like, thinking of writing something, like, I write these songs before I get paid. So, it's kind of like, you do have to make the product first. Mm-hmm. And then you go out and sell it. Just the same way you make the hamburger at the restaurant. Like, you don't get paid before the doors are open, you know what I mean? So, I think there's give and take to that.
Yeah.
But I would sincerely hope the winner got compensated, besides just, like, some swag, which
right.
They surely got, like, a pint glass. Anyway, okay, Emma Watson, the song. Sometimes I make little challenges to myself, like, write a song that does that. And so there's the fairly well-known in, like, the alt-country circle, the Mermaid Avenue albums, which are like Wilco and Billy Bragg, who got some of Woody Guthrie's notebooks, which were supposedly lyrics, that just songs he never got around to. And one of those is Ingrid Bergman. I'll sing a little bit of Ingrid Bergman.
Just like a verse.
Ingrid Bergman, Ingrid Bergman, let's go make a picture on the island of Stromboli, Ingrid Bergman, and so on. So it's a little cute little song about Ingrid Bergman. I was like, all right, I can write one of those Hollywood, you know, gorgeous lady songs. Now, who would it be? So I slept on it for a while, and it just occurred to me, probably after looking on the internet at the latest Emma Watson article, that it should be, obviously, Emma Watson. And it has a nice singable amount of syllables. It kind of rolled off. So when I started playing that guitar lick, that process I was talking about earlier, just kind of recording and seeing what comes out, I was playing just that chord over and over. And like, Emma Watson just kind of came out. And that made sense. And then I just sat around writing the lyrics. And then those kind of came together pretty easily, too.
Cool.
Yeah. Just kind of a cheeky challenge to myself. Can I write a song about, a love song about someone I don't know that's very, very famous? Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're over an hour now, so
cool.
I guess is there anything else you want to bring up or any notable things going on you think people ought to know about?
Well, check out the old paints. Be looking for us. You know how social media works, so look up the old paints, and if you want to hear these songs like band version, then obviously come to a show. And if you can't make it out that night, find us on the band camp, The Old Paints, and our new album is called This Machine, and it has some pretty good rocking songs on it. So, yeah, that's what I would say. And if I was going to say two things, I'd say Johnsonville, Bigelow, McDonald's, Waffle House, some kind of lemon organization, some kind of honey farm, and Huggies. Those are the seven products we've mentioned. If any, you know, one or more, if one or more of you are listening, one to seven of you, contact me. Contact Back to the Fire. Let's get some sponsorship going.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get rich off of this, because we don't want to work for free. We can't survive off exposure too long. So let's get some big, fat sacks of money rolling in here. Good night, Alabama.
See y'all next time.
Cool.
All right, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Andy Harris. And, yeah, check out their stuff. I really do enjoy their music. It's, he used the word earlier in the conversation, it is the word that I was thinking in relation to their music when I was listening to it, but lackadaisical. It's well put together, but it's still, like, lackadaisical, and that's, you know, like, an interesting, juxtaposition for me. And, yeah, like, I don't want to give, like, the wrong impression, about, like, you know, I don't want to, you know, promote Birmingham solely for, you know, it just being Birmingham or whatever. Like, I encourage, people who, you know, want to go out and settle in other areas, you know, that's perfectly fine. I think, you know, that's just the most important thing, though, is that we, I guess, you know, try to maintain the networks that we've created with one another and ensure the sharing of information. You know, like, if something's working somewhere, then let people know that's happening and what's going on, so that it can be replicated elsewhere. You know, we can all benefit from that, I believe. So, yeah. And, you know, I'm a little bit concerned about, I guess, gentrification in Birmingham, because, yeah, like, as Andy mentioned, like, got a lot of apartments coming in now, and, you know, that's, they're trying to attract more people to come live in the city, and so that would mean, you know, more money would be staying in the city, rather than going over the mountain. But still, it's important to look at, like, who is being, like, who's going to be able to have access to those apartments, and yeah, like, I've been, you know, it's bringing in money from over the mountain, essentially, transplanting people into Birmingham, and bringing their own culture and ways with it, and unfortunately, like, you know, artists always seem to have some sort of hand or role in that process. Like, you know, the I guess typical flow is that, you know, the communities become displaced, and then artists move in and start trying to revitalize, then they start getting priced out, and then they start bringing in more of the, like, the yuppie type folk, and that's just the cycle. And, you know, how do we break that cycle? I don't have the answers for that. But if you think you do, then, you know, please share with me those ideas. I would be interested in hearing them. You know, this you know, conversation with Andy was pretty upbeat and comical, so I figured I had to end it on more of a serious note for some reason. You know, it wasn't intentional, it just sort of turned out that way. Anyways, sorry about that. And, but, you know, it is, you know, like, a something that, you know, I believe is, you know, needs to be confronted, and, And I'm just putting that out on the table. So, one more time, go check out the old paints, either on the internet or go check out one of their shows, or, you know, preferably if you're able to make it out to that. And thanks for tuning in to another episode of Back to the Fire. You can find all my episodes up on monolithradio.com. Check out all the shows that are going to be coming up on monolithradio.com, because that's like, they're all local or you know, independently made endeavors, and you know, it's good to support folks if, you know, they're doing something that you like. Until next time, be well.